Welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
Jake, what do you think? Do you think you need one of these to keep track of your beard? I mean, it looks a little out of control over there. You might need some grooming.
Yeah, no, definitely not the beard. Maybe the hair. Yeah. I used to have one of those as a kid where it was this switchblade, you know?
It's what we're talking about. Like, it's a switchblade beard knife thing. Beard comb.
It's called a comb. Yep, that's a comb.
Yeah, comb. It's hand saw cut. Handmade.
Why do you have that?
Because I have a beard, Jake. This in the car with me. It's in my pocket.
Did you purchase this for that specific purpose?
Yes, I did.
Okay, that's
it's just cool, not a problem you have.
I guess
it's just not a problem.
No,
you
certainly
have.
Not. No, no. The extent of my facial hair is my patchy mustache.
Why are you dragging that thing along for so long, dude? Why don't you just let it go? You just gotta let it go, man.
Just take it off.
You gotta let it go.
Just peel it off. What if it was just a fake one at that?
I don't know. Just have the cat lick it off. You got a cat right there next to you.
I do have a cat, right? Did you see the kitty?
I saw the tail whipping around a little bit. So what are we talking about today? What's going on?
We are talking about your adventure. You once again traversed the United States. You also went out to Luftgekühlt, the amazing Porsche air-cooled show that I made the terrible, regrettable choice of not going to. So I want to hear what I missed out on, and I'll commiserate along with all the listeners as you talk about what it looked like. An amazing event.
Yeah. Luftgekühlt was awesome. I mean, obviously, my journey was so much more than that. It was flying out with Jeff, picking up the car.
Which is why I feel like it's worth talking about, and I want to hear about it.
Yeah. So what do you want to know?
Well, let's start at the beginning. This was what? The beginning of a week and a half ago, I guess?
No, more than that, because the whole trip was like 12 days. I mean, it was like forever. I flew out and paid for the car. Picked the car up and drove it around a little bit. Went up, helped Matt Crook figure out his 911S.
What car?
My 911. This.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know you hadn't paid for it. You had already acquired it, and then it went back to.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So I originally went out.
I got it.
Picked up the car.
I got it. Yes.
Drove the car around, which realistically, I probably didn't need to go pick it up, but it was good to put some miles on it before I flew out the second time. For Luftgekühlt and pick the car up to drive it across the country. So I put maybe 600 miles, 700 miles on it, driving
fresh,
around.
Fresh rebuild. So
fresh rebuild.
Well, this was basically like the break-in, right?
Yeah, it was straight 30-weight oil. I wasn't too hard on the car.
Which, why do they use just straight weight 30?
Because it when you have rings, they need a seat. And you don't want like mixed weight. You don't want synthetic. You want dinosaur bones, liquefied dinosaur bones to seat your rings to the cylinder walls.
Got it.
Yes. It's I don't know the chemistry of it, but I know
you don't want it too lubricated.
Yeah, you don't want
a little
oil.
Bit of friction.
Yeah, you don't want too good of oil in there when you're doing it. You want a little bit of friction. You want it to seat in. And what's interesting is I had forgotten this, but you can feel the motor over time. The characteristics of it change. You can
sure,
feel
I know it's
it
supposed to like
up.
Loosen up, right?
Yeah, it loosens up. You can feel it change. You can feel it make more power.
Yep, you can just wants to rev a little
this.
More.
It's not dragging on itself. And you know, there's a lot of moving parts, and they all add up to a little bit of friction, and everything's tight.
Sure.
So
yeah,
over time,
absolutely.
It loosened up, and it was pretty. I wouldn't say I babied it, but I was pretty easy on it that
well,
first
yeah,
trip.
You're breaking it in, although it's funny because there's multiple like
schools,
schools of thought or methodologies on breaking in a motor. Some are like, yep, take it easy, don't go too hard on it, and others are like, absolutely thrash it, you can't go easy on it, otherwise it won't break in well.
I think it's a good mix of both.
Yeah, I mean, from like an engineering standpoint or the actual physics of it, what you're trying to do is heat cycle it back and forth and also basically drag the ring. So you need pressure on both sides. So they say to rev it up, but then also engine brake and run it down because then the you're using the vacuum of the cylinders
to
basically drag the piston rings the other way.
There's a universal thought, though, is you don't just drive on the freeway at 4,000 RPM.
Right.
That is the universal thought is don't do that.
You need to alter or change your rev.
Your variations.
Okay, cool. So that was prior. to this trip.
That was prior to this trip. I went again and picked up the car, and I mean it's great. You know, Marco had it on the dyno, did 280 horsepower, which I think with drivetrain
very
loss
healthy
is well over 300 horsepower.
Very healthy for
well
that
over
build.
300 horsepower, 310, 315 horsepower, which is like there's people that I know that say that they know. They're like, oh, there's no way it's not going to make it. That's a 230 horsepower, 240 horsepower motor. Porsche overrates everything. You know, there's all these naysayers and these grumpy old fucks that just tell you it's going to make this or make that. And it's like, boom, there you go. Here it is.
Well,
right here.
Then you have the other skeptics who are like, well, what type of dyno was it? What were the conditions?
Well, that's always going to vary.
What was it calculated out and, corrected for?
Well, that was a question from a couple people, and the answers were given, and everything was corrected, and it is done right. So it is a 380 horsepower. 280 horsepower engine. 380 horsepower.
380 would
blow my transmission up. Which
a whole
is,
nother.
Holy
ballpark.
Shit! Is that transmission on its last legs? That
really?
I mean, second to third. If you aren't how you spread. Like if you're really hungry. And you have a piece of toast and you're going to put peanut butter on it and you ever just like spread the peanut butter on really slow. You're just smearing to get the perfect spread on the peanut butter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The,
so it goes to all the corners.
Consistency.
You don't want
any
of the bread showing in the middle of the peanut butter.
Okay.
You want just a sheen of, it's like that is what you do when you shift from second to third. Otherwise.
You have to be real smooth. Otherwise
the dog
the
teeth and
won't.
The synchros are just.
Got it.
Hammered.
It's now, just, this is still toast. the tall gearing transmission that you had to replace years ago in California.
Taller
than you had.
This is
right.
This is the transmission from the Nazi place.
Yes. I vaguely remember something about. Oh yes. No, he was very. Yes.
The first thing I
proprietor
said.
Proprietor was very. Yes. Got it.
Very interesting. Like I walked in the door. And the guy's like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, and this is like a little beetle shop in Sonoma. I walk in, he's got.
Do you want to get into this?
It doesn't matter. Who cares? These aren't my thoughts. This is this dude's thoughts. I didn't feel this way. This guy felt this way. I was super offended. So
as you should be.
So I walk into this place. There's like air-cooled shit stacked to the ceiling. Like cylinder heads.
And you're like, cool, this is my guy.
Yeah, great. Where are you from, man? Oh, I'm from Minnesota. The first thing this dude goes, well, how about all them Somalians up there, huh? That's getting out of control. And I was like, oh.
That's
and,
how
and
you're.
Here's the thing. It's like, I need this guy at the time, right? I've got this transmission sitting there. I can see it.
Can't.
The transmission is on the floor right over there. I'm like, okay. Well, I can't be like, you racist fuck. I can't do that. I need the transmission. So I'm from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Like what?
I
didn't also didn't want to say the racist thing because I'm like I have some moral compass. Oh, it's
correct.
Anyway, the guy was telling us how the wildfires came down and burned his house down and melted all the wheels and all his cars. And I'm like, yeah, good. You know, like
there you go.
He had
karma,
stuff.
I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's California.
That's our new
Cali
Fire. Yeah, Cali Fire. Has there been a Cali Fire lately?
Probably.
Anyway, that's the transmission in the car, and it's much taller. I can't imagine having the short ratio gearbox with this engine anymore. Because
just the power or how it revs or what?
Everything. It's got so much power, dude, and torque.
Well, it'd be good for that because it wants to rev up, right? And you said it can rev. And so,
so
that was going to
be
my question. Is
too short of a gearbox.
Do you want to go back to the short gear set if you're going to replace or rebuild the trans?
Nope.
Okay.
I love this gearbox. It's great. It's got a ton of torque from 4,000 RPM on. All the way up to seven.
You just need to go through and do the synchros.
I'm trying to decide if that's something I can do myself.
I did.
Yeah, but you haven't driven it yet, so you don't know.
I have too. I drove it all over the rally. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you need a bunch of
when
specialty
I say
tools?
I did it, Colin came over and did it with me. And I helped him. Because he has all the specialty tools. He's been through numbers of these boxes. This
all right,
was
well,
like
maybe we'll have to hit up Colin to see if he can show me how to do it.
It was pretty painless watching him do it.
Okay, well, I want to do it. I don't want to watch someone else do it. If I'm going to take it apart in my garage,
then he will
how long did it take
instruct you?
You?
Waiting on a few parts that we didn't know we needed, so it was a couple weeks. But it, like, if you had everything there, you could do it in a weekend.
Really? It's not that bad. Okay, well, no, that might not be something that we need to get done, because I know the parts are
simple transmissions.
They're just, the parts are $1,000,000. They're $1,800 for like all the dog teeth.
I was able to find, yeah, a lot of, like, I'm trying to think what I used. There was only a couple I actually got brand new stuff that I needed, and it's great now.
Yeah, so I don't think I'm going to shorten it up. It's good as is. It makes enough power that shortening it up would just be, I don't think it would be good.
Wheel spin city.
I think you'd be shifting too much. You'd be off the power too much. You'd be in, clutch in too much.
I could see that. It's too much. You have a limited slip on that, right?
I don't. That is another thing I would like to do, because it is like, I think that would help a lot, putting a limited slip on there. Because right now, if you're, I mean, if you're in second gear and you romp on it, it gets wiggly, which is insane for a rear engine car, because there's 650 pounds.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of weight back there for traction.
And first gear is stupid. I used to have to clutch kick it in second gear if I wanted to get it to, like, if I was turning left somewhere, I'd have to clutch kick it. Now I just
to get it to rotate.
It just drifts.
That's awesome.
It's fun being able to do that. Finally, having a car that you can just
limit a slip, and then you can do like shorter gears. You won't have a problem. You'll have traction.
It's not about the traction. It's about being.
I know. It's about
in the clutch, shifting all the time. You'll see. You'll drive it. You'll see. It's perfect.
I know. Yeah. Maybe for a race car, that's a thing, but not for a street car.
I don't need it. It's a street car. I like driving it around. The wife immediately hopped in it and drove it somewhere when I got home. I want her to be able to drive it. And right now it's borderline not a street car, just the way that it behaves and operates. But
why is that?
So, a couple things. So when I got the car, now this is talking recently. So when I was about to drive up to Lyft, I got the car, the shift or the throttle linkage was out of spec. So I had to redo the throttle linkage to get the idle to come back down. The rods were like not the right lengths. So I got that all figured out, and it still is like hanging on ignition timing a little bit. Like it doesn't want to return to idle.
Okay.
So it's like this balance of I need it to return to idle, but the idle can't be set so low that it dies instead of just returning to idle. So it'll rev up and it'll come down to like 1500 RPMs. And it'll sit there for a second and then it'll slowly drop down and then idle. And if I reduce the idle anymore, it'll just die. So I'm like in this, I'm in this spot where I'm like, man, I don't really know exactly what to do. I added fuel, which helps, you know, helps.
I was wondering, mixture.
I added some fuel, and I checked the timing today. The timing was stock timing. This is like really granular for people that don't give a shit.
That's okay. Well, let me just, I'll bring it back and then you can get into it. So, you know, when you're talking about the idle hanging, I was going to say there's actually three things it could be. Yep. It could actually be a lot of times that's indicative of an air leak. Everything else being, you know, stock and correct.
It's not that.
An air leak can do that. Yes.
Yep.
Probably not. Ignition timing, as you're going to talk about, is a big one, right? And then, you know, your idle set point, if it does eventually come down, that it's not about your idle set point. It's something else.
It's the ignition timing. It's not a vacuum leak, because it did this.
Which you had that, your ignition timing, like recurved, rebuilt that distributor, right?
I did. So I'm a little confused.
Maybe?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's kind of like, I'm kind of going to fight with it a little bit and see what I can figure out.
Yeah, that's not helpful for driving, though.
No, it idles at like 1,200, 1,500, which isn't the end of the world. You know, that's not that bad, but I would like a 900 RPM idle. You know, I would like...
Yes, yep, 950
I would like
plus
it to
or
be
minus
what it's
is what it's supposed
to be.
I'd
like it to be what it's supposed to be. So just because, like, it's like sometimes it's harder to get into gear when the engine is revved up. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not...
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Especially on a weak transmission. It's already
because you're fighting the synchros more. And guess what? If you have a higher idle, now you already have a higher set torque, right? Because your higher revs, your higher torque. So it's basically like you're trying to apply throttle before you're getting it in gear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good. Interesting.
Yeah, it's tough. So I got to figure that out. That's my only qualms with the motor. And we're at the point of almost having, there's not too much left you could do that you wouldn't just put this in a race car, this engine. You know what I mean? It's right there.
Right.
More compression is about it.
More compression and twin plug you would be needed for that.
Yep. I actually, so the static timing, which is, I don't know how granular you want me to get
static
with this,
timing or static compression?
Static ignition timing.
Okay.
So just your timing before the distributor advances, because there's weights in the distributor and a spring, which as you rev it up.
And why do you need that?
Because the more timing advance you have, it ignites the air-fuel mixture sooner in the compression cycle, which gets things, basically gets things moving, right?
The propagation of the flame front in the combustion chamber in your cylinder actually takes time. It takes milliseconds, right? And
but
so
at,
the faster you're 7, going.
But at 7,000 RPMs,
right,
I mean, think
you need
how
to
fast
account
that's
for that.
Happening.
You need to account for that. So that's why as your revs go up, you need to then alter the timing advance of when the spark plug fires. That's ignition timing and advance. And that's why you need dynamic ignition timing as well as just static timing, which is right. Where it should fire at.
You actually have dynamic compression too, which is a whole nother
correct. That's what
situation.
I was going to
talk. We might as well just talk about that in a minute too.
Okay.
Since you're probably going to talk about my compression ratio based on my timing and everything else because you keep talking about it over and over again.
Well, I'm just curious because I hear over and over that you had way too much compression.
From who? Colin?
Knowledgeable sources. Yes,
like
another
who?
Engine builders.
Like
Colin
who?
And Colin's friends who are engine builders.
Ah, okay, great. Colin's friends and Colin's friends. I've
yes.
driven
Anyways.
The car 3,000
no,
miles.
I believe you. It obviously works.
And I had pinging one time, and that was a couple days ago here, when I was drifting around a corner, I had a ton of pinging. A ton. I was like, whoa, shit. You know, and I know exactly what it sounds like. You know, it sounds like a zipper going zzz, zzz. I mean, it's like a little electric zipper or something. So then I did the valve adjustment today. It needed that. You know, you always adjust the valves when you rebuild an engine, you know, a couple valves.
After breaking. Yeah.
Breaking. Adjusted the valves and then got it running, put the new oil in. I'm all set. There was too much oil in the engine, which is each car is a little bit different with how much oil it needs and the level sensors and stuff like that. You know, you fill it up too much, the engine gets hot. And this is especially true with an SC because the vent in an SC goes from the, sorry, Porsche folks, you don't give a shit, but we're going to talk about it anyway.
Porsche folks.
Yeah, non-Porsche folks. So the top of the oil
of the
filter housing goes to the air box to vent the compression
vapor.
and the vapor into the combustion. So it's not just venting oil into the open air like my Mercedes is, which just vents to the earth, which is I don't really give a shit.
Well, it's better than a total loss oiling system, which is like early Harleys and stuff.
Yep,
they didn't have any oil circulation. You had an oil tank and it just dripped it on the motor in the valve train.
Yeah,
it just dripped down on the ground. It's fine. Anyway,
yeah, just keep adding. It's no problem.
It came from the ground originally,
so
Chris.
On an SC, it goes right to the airbox and it's at the top of the oil tank.
Sure.
So if you overfill that, what happens?
You get oil that goes into your intake system.
Physical liquid oil can
correct.
Splash
yes.
and go into your intake system. So it's critical that you don't overfill. It's critical.
Right.
So I, like most guys, will run it low. I don't have to worry about that because it would just spill into the engine compartment because it just goes to a vent to the
you
ring
don't have
hat.
Like a catch can?
I do have a catch can. I do. But it would just, I guess it would go there. And then the
catch
can goes to the vent.
Correct.
I don't care. So I don't give a shit. It doesn't matter to me. But just habit. It's nice to have it. Plus, when I've had it overfilled, even on this car, I'll get a little smoke on startup. I don't know why that is.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly why. It must be with how much oil, with just gravity, the way that the oil from the tank goes into the crankcase and the
back bleeding.
It's well that or it, but the oil level must come up just enough, and then it sits there and pools on the rings, you know, just kind of
you know,
I don't
they send
know, flat
they,
engine.
They
shit.
Sell it correct, and they sell a check valve that some people run between the motor and the tank, like the drain or the pump back. So it's not if it's sitting for a while, it's not supposed to basically be able to flow back into the motor.
Well, cheaply enough, you can just run a little bit less oil, and it's fine. And this is especially a problem if you get really hot. You know, we've got probably 12 quarts total in the car. I usually add, because I've got an oil cooler and stuff like that.
It depends your oil cooler, everything else.
Everything.
Exactly.
It varies greatly. I end up putting, when I change the oil, I put 7 in to start.
Okay.
And then I'll warm it up. You know, you've got oil pressure.
That seems really low.
It's not. You put the oil in, and you have oil pressure. You let it warm up to see how much more you need to add.
Sure.
Okay, Jake.
What?
What is yes, with the skeptical look? This is what
I'm
not you skeptical. Do.
I'm I moving was, along. This
there
is
have been professional mechanics that taught me how to do an oil change on this car that I trust. That charge
how
50,000?
Much more do you end up putting in?
Usually a couple quarts, 2-3 quarts, up to like anywhere from 9 to 10 total. Plus whatever's in the oil.
So why don't you just start with 9?
Because I want it to be, because then it's too much. It can be too much. I want it to be in exactly the spot that I want it to be.
Mine doesn't even have an oil cooler and it takes 9 to 10.
That makes a lot of sense, because guess what you don't do when you change your oil? I don't drain the oil cooler. All that oil stays in there. So yes, it takes 9 to 10. I put in 7, get it warm, and then I can look at the gauge and look at the level, and I can add it to the exact same point every single time.
Cool. This is what okay. This is. How did we get on this tangent? Okay.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's fine. Who cares?
Yeah. No, it doesn't matter.
How many times have you changed the oil in your car? 3?
No, more than that.
3 or 4 times. I've changed the oil probably
I've had it
15
years.
15 times I've changed the oil in these things.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And it works. Stop second guessing me all the time. Just for like the sake of doing it or whatever it is.
Fine,
that you're doing.
Chris, you're always right.
I am right.
There you go. Podcast over. Don't even need to discuss anything.
Yeah, just play the music. Should we just play the outro?
Sure, and we're done.
Finally. So,
anyways.
Someone clip that, by the way. Someone clip that. Jake
yeah,
saying
well,
I'm
that
always
was
right.
Sarcasm, if you couldn't tell.
Yeah, well, just crop that part out where he says it's sarcasm out and just leave the other part.
Who
okay,
are you
anyway.
Telling this to?
Whoever's listening.
Okay. Whoever's
listening. Anyway, so I got the oil changed. And then first thing I do is, because I had a little detonation, is go back. I wanted to check and see what the timing is, the ignition timing is.
Right.
Yes. I didn't have it. Didn't have it in California. Didn't have it at any point during the whole trip. Never. It was just
you didn't
one,
check it, you're saying.
Didn't check it,
oh,
but I never
it.
Had
ping
no
it.
Pinging.
Got it.
None. Zero. I was listening for it.
Got
none.
It.
Okay, yeah. Jake? None. Okay. None. Zero.
Sure. Yeah, got it.
But I had like this huge drift around this corner, just like, waka, 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 and it pinged. All right? So I'm like, okay, let's check it and see where it's at. Stock timing is 5 degrees before top dead center, which leads to about 33 to 35 at full
at
advance.
Full, yes.
This was set
dynamic.
At 10 or 11.
That's
and it was pulling
quite a
40.
Bit.
It was pulling 40 degrees of timing.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
I was like, holy shit, that's a lot. So I haven't driven it yet, but I backed it down to 5, like stack timing. And then what I'll probably do is drive it for a little while, and then I'll eke it up a little bit till I hear it again, and then I'll back it off a couple degrees. And that's just it's just what you do. You know, I don't have knock sensors. It's just what you do. If you want to try and make the most out of the car, that's what you do.
Yeah, you gotta
advance it till you hear it,
which is
and then
probably
you come
why it was there, because to dyno it and get the best numbers and everything else, they were
absolutely
playing with it. Right?
Absolutely. So that at sea level, that timing made the most power.
Sure.
So now that I'm here, I'm not at sea level anymore. I'm at 1,000 feet. It is what it is. I can run 93 and I can run 91 non-ox, which gas in California is garbage.
Garbage. Yeah, I've heard that from everyone.
It's
why
absolute
is that?
Trash.
What does that? What does that mean? Like you can't get.
There's no non-oxygenated fuel. Which is no ethanol.
Right.
Ethanol is in everything, and I couldn't find race fuel anywhere. It's like here I can drive like 3 blocks from my house and get race fuel.
It's strange
like
because that's supposed to be
stations.
The mecca of you know,
what environmentalism. Yes, you are correct.
Well, yes, but also cars, right?
Yeah. So there's ethanol that's and everything. Culture. It's probably illegal. Who knows? Maybe it's illegal to sell it without. Ethanol in it. I have no idea. Plus, it has those
ethanol.
Pumps where it's got like the whatever. It's got the pumps where it's got the thing that vacuums
the
up
weird...
the vapors. And I have to like, I put in, I have to like physically fake it and hold it up the whole time I'm filling up because the way that my tank is, it just doesn't know that the stupid flange is on the thing. Stupid.
Yeah. So it just won't pump.
Won't pump. All right. Where are we at? Did the ignition timing?
I don't know.
Anyway.
You hate California.
I do. I hate and love California all at the same time.
I know
time.
You do. I know you do.
I have so many friends and beautiful people there. So now the car is good now. But anyway, so I picked up the car. Where are we at? I'm lost.
Yeah, as is everyone else. The only thing I want to ask about is because I was skeptical of your compression because I was being told that this was like 10 to 1 compression, single plug.
It's probably
everyone's like,
my guess is it's a little over 10 to 1 static compression. which means what the compression is when the valves are closed, measure.
And you, but with camshafts and valve overlap,
huge camshafts.
Right.
Okay. So,
your dynamic compression ratio is then less.
Probably much less. It's probably, I don't know, maybe 9 to 1, 9.5 to 1. And I had a little thing here that I pulled up to explain how this works. Do you care?
Dude, give me the, I'll tell you when I don't care anymore.
It's one pair. Well, dude, the rants that you go on with the nonsensical bullshit that nobody
can
understand.
It's not nonsensical.
You're like,
it's exactly sensical, and therefore you don't care because I have facts.
I think this is super interesting.
Go ahead.
Example of how this works. Two identical engines, both with 9-to-1 static compression, which is basically what we're talking about here with, you know, the what is measured when you compress the air with all the valves shut at top dead center.
Correct.
That's your static compression. The only difference is in the cam profiles. One has no overlap with a given intake valve timing to go along with the rest of the cam's profile, and the other has a lot of overlap with a completely different intake valve timing to go with the cam's overall profile.
Sure.
Overlap is the time in which both valves are open as the piston pushes exhaust out and starts to suck new fuel and air into the cylinder. When the exhaust valve is closing and the intake valve begins to open, there is a time on high performance and race cams where both valves are actually open at the same time. As both valves are open, a little, quote, reversion gets pushed up the intake valve, which slows the overall velocity down of the new fuel and air charge coming into the cylinder. This reversion is something that cams or carburetors love. Carburetors love the compression signal from reversion. That's me saying that. Exhaust gas is still trying to get out of the cylinder at low RPMs.
This reversion is what that lumpy idle is from. They don't it. What they like is the ability to use the inertia of the column of air to continue moving.
Yes, but that reversion is a signal to the carburetor of compression. That's a signal.
It's a pressure wave.
Yes. Yes. That is a signal to the carburetor. Because it's to do its shit. I don't know. I'm not a fucking scientist.
No, that's not. Yes. Reversion is not like carburetors don't like reversion.
Yes, they do.
Reversion is
that's back pressure in exhaust and intake. Right. Okay. It's a signal to the carburetor.
You're talking about
Helmholtz
resonance waves. Okay.
Okay.
And that's tuned for a specific, that frequency is tuned and length of your intake and exhaust runners are tuned for a specific resonance frequency, aka RPM range. And when you're talking about reverberance, with this overlap and where it's like going back and forth and you get the lumpy idle, that's because it's not at the optimized speed or RPM range. So it's actually not optimized right there.
Not at low idle. Not at low idle.
Correct. It's when you're at high RPM, what's actually happening is you're using, because the air is flowing so quickly, you're using the inertia, the weight of the air itself, to continue pushing in even after the piston has stopped pulling, right? Yes. So that's why you're able to keep it open longer, because it's just by itself, the inertia or the mass of the air keeps pushing in and you get kind of like a ram or a supercharger effect.
Yes.
That's what valve overlap actually does.
Yes, I think the disconnect between you and I, you are correct, is...
You should clip that clip.
Carburetors don't care. Okay?
Right.
Carburetors don't care that this is happening. Well, let me rephrase that. Individual throttle bodies don't care that this is happening. If you start getting this reversion in a intake charge that is a shared throttle body, it can cause a big
with
problem.
With a plenum, do then is you have... Yeah, it upsets that same frequency waves
when other cylinders need it.
Correct.
That's what I should have said. You're correct. This, as you said, overlap period in the valve timing is what causes that rumpity rump sound everybody likes so much.
Yeah.
Overlap causes a scavenging effect as the engine RPM increases. This is why performance cams come alive at high RPMs. It's not just the cam making the power. It's the cam scavenging effect working as the RPM increases, which increases cylinder pressure. Cylinder pressure makes the power. The downside of that rumpy rump sound in most street engines is that the overlap also causes a decrease in manifold vacuum, making power brakes a nightmare and throttle response a bit sluggish. All right. So that's it. That's what I
got.
It reduces compression. Good. I think this guy says, I mean, it can be some racing engines with 13-to-1 or so compression can only have 125 to 150 50 PSI of cylinder pressure just because the cams are so aggressive.
You're basically bleeding pressure off in the trade-off for ramming as much air in as possible.
So I'm just saying I probably have 10-to-1 compression.
That explains.
However, my dynamic compression, wide open throttle, high RPM is probably less.
Correct. That makes said, perfect
my
sense.
My timing was set pretty high. We've backed off a little bit. We'll figure it out. We don't need any
good
deal to break
anything. Okay.
Speaking of gas in California,
half an hour in, and we haven't even talked about your
trip. It's okay.
I know.
It's a podcast. It's fine. Oh, I lost my notes. Oh, here they are. We're good. Okay. So day one, I arrived to pick up. I had to make notes because I was gone for 14 days. Go ahead. You interview me on this, and we'll just go from there. I don't want to go through a litany of shit.
No, you said you'd stop speaking of California gas or something.
Yeah, I mean, there was a point where I was driving. Jeff and I were driving up to Lufkikult, and I pull into the Gassen shop.
Okay,
I needed gas. Okay, so I pull up
and
to the Gassen
you
shop.
You could shop. Yeah,
the Gassen shop is on the corner and has a big red awning that just says gas and shop. And then there's a little toll, almost a toll booth, in the middle.
Right.
The only things you could buy, there's three things.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Well, I'll boil it down to two things. Okay. Red Bull, energy drinks and tobacco products. That's it. So
that's two.
Swisher Sweets. Yeah, two things.
Okay. What was the third you were going to say?
I was going to break tobacco products down into a few different things.
Okay. Yeah.
But Swisher Sweets, the shit that makes your teeth rot out, but you could buy gas too. Yeah, there's three things. You could also buy gas. And Jeff goes, I don't think you should get gas here. And I'm like, it's fine. Look how many people are at this gas station. There's no way that they have bad gas. You know, bad gas is when gas sits in the tank, nobody uses it,
which
water.
I experienced on the way to Indianapolis for Luft. What is that, a year or two ago?
Yes.
Remember
and
that
now
experience?
I have experienced it as well.
Oh, no.
So
okay.
I put 5 gallons of gas and shop in, and the car ran like shit. And I go, okay, the only thing that has changed
is the bad gas.
It's I had to keep telling that to myself. The only thing that's changed is the gas. I didn't break something. The only thing that changed is the gas.
Oh,
I didn't break something. I'm so scared. I'm only 100 miles from Marco's shop.
So what I was worried about is because the gas was so bad, it wasn't igniting fully. And so it'd basically be running rich. And so I was worried about washing cylinders or something.
Yeah.
It was
not that bad. If I was just on the throttle a little bit, it was okay. I could tootle down the freeway fine. You know, it was fine. As soon as I would roll into it, it was just
so
no good.
And we talk about, that ethanol, you can't get non-oxy anywhere. The ethanol, what have we talked about before? When it sits too long, it
ethanol
actually attracts
moisture. Buddies.
Yep, exactly. It attracts moisture. And so that's why it won't ignite as fully.
Because it's literally water.
Yes.
So I drive up. I drive as far as I can bear to get the to get the fuel level down so I can put more gas in.
Yeah.
Because there was this little thing in the back of my little Tweety Bird in the back of my head that says, don't put a ton in just in case. Which at that point, I should have been like, don't put any in, you fucking idiots. None.
Right.
Zero gas. Drive across the overpass to get Chevron.
What led Jeff to believe that this was no bueno?
Because he has heard many times that California has shitty gas.
Okay.
I didn't know.
I mean, I've heard that, but I didn't believe it. I thought that was just quality of gas, not that it's been sitting there and is actually bad.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
Anyways. Okay.
So I drive, I get to a Shell. I've driven 6 gallons out of it. I fill it up. I go inside. I buy two things of octane booster.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's one thing of octane booster and one thing that's remove water from your gas.
Yeah. Like heat or seafoam
and just
or whatever.
And then it was fine.
That's what you need.
It was fine. Okay. So I drove that tank carefully. I still didn't do any
hammer
down time. Drove that tank out to a quarter tank and then filled it all the way up again. And then by that time, I'd forgotten about it. So that was great. Ugh. God.
Okay. So you and Jeff flew out to Los Angeles to pick up the car.
Los Angeles, picked up a car, went and met with Matt
Crook. And then
From 10% or Bust, helps out with Overcrest. Amazing dude. Spent a little bit of time because he's got that Targa that we got running.
And that was the original trip. Yeah.
Yep. That was he wanted to take that car so bad.
Okay.
He wanted to take the car so bad. And it ran pretty good when we got there, but I was like, dude, please don't take the car.
Please. How long of a trip is this up to where Luft was?
It was 5 hours, but it ended up taking us like 13, and I can explain
that. Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, dude, please don't take this car, mainly because, like, I thought it would probably make it, you know.
But it's unproven.
Well, he drives it around town, you know, whatever.
Okay.
It would probably make it. I gave it an 80% chance of making it, which is like,
okay.
If it were me, I would hop in the car and try and drive it across the country because I love pain.
Right.
But I was like, here's the thing. Matt has to work. Like, he's a big part of Luft Gekult. I have to work too. I'm shooting for Mobile One and participating in some shenanigans for Mobile One. I have to be there. Jeff is doing painting on a hood for
also
Mobile One.
Has to
He's
get there.
Gotta be there. And here's what happens. Matt breaks down. 20% chance Matt breaks down. What do I have to do? What is like my responsibility as a friend
knows? You have to wait and get him going.
I have to stop.
You have to get the car back. Yep.
And I didn't want to feel
that
stress.
This isn't Top Gear. You can't just be like, adios.
No. Although I told him, I'm like, dude, if you break down, I'm going to leave you.
Yeah. Yeah. But in reality, you're like, no, I can't do that.
Of course I couldn't really do that.
I know.
That's a lie. That's a straight up lie. I would never leave a man behind. Except for Cashy, who we'll talk about. We did leave him behind 100%.
Uh-oh.
Not alone, okay. But we did leave him behind. Anyway, so we're driving. He ends up getting a ride with this French dude who was like a really good photographer. He rode with him. And then I went and I was with Jeff, and we were all kind of driving up together. There's a couple other guys. We were with Damon, who was the founder of DC Shoes. He's got a 944 that's totally dialed by Hoonigan. Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Of all the Black Safari 944s I've seen, that thing was cherry pie. Really, really nice.
Yeah.
And there was this 911R thing that was a buddy of Matt's or whatever. That car was okay. And then there was Kashi, who's a professional chef, had a 914 used to be owned by Matt. And he got this thing all dialed in. Matt sold it to him kind of in a state of like not quite ready to run. So this guy spent like so much time getting this car going, just ages, getting it mint, getting it ready to go. We pull over at this place. He's like, dude, the throttle's sticking. I'm like, oh, I'll help you. Like, yes, a problem. Yeah. I would love to. Dude, I love solving problems. Like, if I can like have a problem that I can solve, I love it. You know, I love the puzzle.
Yeah, it gives
I love
you
the
that
riddle.
Sense of satisfaction.
Not
right?
like that Mercedes, which you can't see. It's actually on fire right now at the end of the driveway.
Sure.
In the swamp.
That
you
makes
just you just
perfect
can't see
sense.
It. It's back there.
Yep. Makes perfect sense.
We pull over. I'm like, yeah, I'll help us. We walk over and I look and I see like this black puddle underneath his car. And he's
that's
like, it's
not
he's like, well,
good.
That's the end of that. And I'm like, this is a new engine. Why is the oil black? I'm like, that's not you. That's not your car. That's not oil. That's like some black oil from some other asshole that parked there. And I'm like, all right, let's look at the throttle linkage. And then I kind of go, I better look. So I get down on my hands and knees, and the whole bottom of the differential is soaked in gear oil, Swepco, blue, like dark blue gear oil.
Okay.
And I look, and I go,
just a hole.
I go, dude, no. I go, dude, the flanges that seal the CV shafts,
axles.
They're out. They're like they've run themselves out of the transmission.
Yeah.
And he'd had the transmission rebuilt by somebody or whatever. And, you know,
forgot to put the clips or something in that retains them.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what happens, but I think that something was messed up with the installation of the flanges and they wiggled and it pushed those out. So, I mean, I stuck a pry bar up there and I could push them back in. But I'm like, dude, you cannot drive this thing.
Yeah.
You just can't. You cannot.
Shoot.
So,
well, at least it wasn't the motor.
We left them there. And I think a couple of the other guys stayed till the tow truck got there and whatever. Because we had to go, Jeff had to paint. He did this thing for Mobile One where he did this super cool paint job on this hood.
Yeah,
awesome.
It was very cool.
It looked super cool. And it was, I could just talk about this now. It was kind of controversial, right? Like,
why?
Because it says drugs on it.
The branding, yeah.
It says drugs on it. And, you know, I don't need to get into the word of controversy. It came from more.
Well, I'll just
but it's always
explained.
Controversial.
Yeah, driving is my drug is their mantra, right?
And I think,
and of
that,
course, it's kind of edgy because it has to do with drugs.
It is. But
was there
the
people
deal.
Talking about it?
Yeah, there was. Here's the deal. Yes, it's edgy. Why? Because drugs are something that people use to escape their life or whatever it is. When you have an addiction, it becomes a physical addiction and a mental addiction. Okay.
Absolutely.
Drugs are bad. Okay. My mom died. Heroin overdose. Okay. Drugs are bad.
Yeah. It's very bad.
But there are different, like, drug as a term can be fairly malleable, I think. We all take drugs, right? You take drugs.
Medication.
Right. Drug. And they all do different things to heal or make our lives better.
Yes.
Okay. So when I think driving is my drug, I think it's,
that's not a bad thing.
I think it's great because you have this contrast of how bad drugs could be.
Yep.
But you also have this contrast of how amazing they can be. And driving is my drug. And, you know, for me, exploration and what it does for me is probably like a big dopamine well.
Absolutely.
Right. Does great things for me. Allows me to defrag. I mean, I've had a lot of trouble with mental health over the last year. Like, I've really struggled since COVID fucked me up. And this is the first road trip that I've had that I did with my daughter that I had like some personal battles with myself, because I was you're by yourself. I mean, I had my kid with me, but you know, she's 8 looking out the fucking window for 10 hours.
You still have a lot of time to yourself.
I had some really big personal battles. And, you know, if I was able to farm and garden through a lot of my mind on the trip. And that's what Kilo and Jeff mean when they say driving is my drug. That's what they're talking about. And I mean, it can mean different things to different people. Some people it makes them happy, you know, whatever it is. For me, that's the drug that it gives me. So I was asked about this, you know, Mobile One. I did an interview with them. I don't think it made the clip or whatever, but they asked me, they said, what do you think of the controversy of this particular art piece? And I told them that, and they're like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There's some controversy there, but you know, whatever, it's a good message, especially based on the contrast of how bad the message can be or how bad drugs can be. They don't have to be this way. They can also be this way. Find yours, whatever it is. That's not one that's going to destroy your fucking life.
Right. It's not like he's saying heroin is good. That was not the message.
No,
not the message.
It is not the message.
So you obviously made it then.
We left the poor guy.
And, but you did make it up.
Matt and Damon, I think, stayed with him. And so read the art thing. Like, Jeff didn't have the paint he needed. Like, he didn't have all the paint he needed. So we had to go to downtown Oakland to get the paint that he needed to do his project. So we're like, they close at this time. We're here. Holy shit. We have to do this. Plus, we have to take a look at the streetlight get together that Overcrest and Blue Collective and Automotive Anonymous
put together.
Our wonderful podcast partner are doing have to get up there and see it. And like, oh my God, we're like, dude, we got to go. Bye. See you. We left him there. And we're driving. We get to Oakland, get the paint, hop back in the car, plug Vallejo, which is where Luftgekühlt is. It's on Mare Island, which is old World War II naval base next to Vallejo.
That's really
super
cool.
Rad.
Yeah.
Dude, the industry. I'll get there. I plug it into my phone. We start driving. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I'm in the hills above the bay.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, I'm not on the freeway. Everything is red. There is nowhere you can go. People are on side streets honking at each other. The whole hills above the bay are just like, you ever
congested traffic.
You ever see the microscopic view of what blood vessels look like, and there's like little cells like flowing around? And, remember in school where it'd be like, this is the vascular system. It carries oxygen in your blood to different organs in your body.
I think what your point is, like, everything is full.
Everything was full. There were cells everywhere. I mean, it was just like the circulatory system of this city was fucked. And I mean that in the most effed way possible. There is only from Oakland to Vallejo, there is a bridge. There's a bridge that goes across. Uh-huh. And here's the thing that I've learned from talking to people about San Francisco and the Bay Area. It all works great But if one thing doesn't work, it's over. It's over.
It screws everything up. Jeez.
So we're in the hills, and I'm in this car. And the throttle response on this car is pretty good. I mean, it's it's good.
Yeah.
Right? So at low idle, when you're trying
It's
responsive. You come off idle, you rev it up. It revs up fast, and it comes down pretty quick. So you're trying to modulate this in first gear, going up, going up hills in the Oakland Hills. I mean, these are these aren't hills. They're hills.
No.
Okay.
These are the hills.
In Minnesota, we have hills. In Oakland, they have hills. And that's what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
And it I can smell my clutch after like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 3 hours of this. And it still says like over an hour in traffic. So we're sitting there. And I see across the street, and we're trying to like go on side streets, go this way, go around.
Figure out your way. Yeah.
Nothing. There's no way.
Doesn't work.
Not possible. So we're sitting at this on the street, and it's like a four lane thoroughfare or whatever. And I look over and I see like burgers, apple pie. I'm like, I can't think there's anything better than burgers and apple pie right now. So we pull off to this place called Red Onion. And we go and we sit back and we're relaxing. We're on a patio. There's like a baseball diamond slightly out of view. And the crowd is cheering and everybody's happy. And it felt very like Americana, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, this is really nice.
We're in there
for like an hour. And we're like, it's got to be cleared up by now. Go outside. Bumper to bumper traffic outside the restaurant.
Jeez.
And we're like, oh, my God. And we find out that there is like some old shitty beat up ass truck had a big trailer full of scrap metal and it had flipped over on the freeway right before the stupid bridge, like right there. And it took them 5 hours to clean it up, 6 hours to clean it up, which in my mind is like, what are we doing? Why? Was there some sort of like OSHA situation that someone was monitoring them? Pick the shit up, throw it off the fucking road and open the freeway, pick it up later at like 2 o'clock in the morning. What are we doing?
Right. Better yet, well, they don't have plow trucks, but you just have a plow truck and scrape it all to the side.
Now,
I
don't know if like there was other casualties involved, but when I drove by, it was the truck had been righted up and every single piece of scrap metal was back in its trailer.
Yeah.
Did we really need to do that? Anyway, so this impacted everybody. So Jeff had wanted to see the hood ahead of time, see the environment he was in, rightly so. He just wanted to take a look.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot of pressure. I mean, standing there like painting as thousands of people watch you. Like, it's like public speaking times 10 because you're doing something creative.
That's, literally a performing art. Yes.
Performing a subjective thing in front of people. So we wanted to like go, oh, dude, nope. Can we go to media to get our media passes? Nope. Everything's closed. We didn't get out of this traffic till 8 o'clock. Oh. And we had left at 6 that morning. So it took us 14 hours. To do a 5 hour, 6 hour drive. It was the worst drive experience of my entire life. Like, bar none, Chicago doesn't have nothing on what happened to me. The only thing that could have made it worse is if it was hot. But the traffic was ridiculous.
That's so frustrating.
It was like the cells and the blood had turned to goo. And it wasn't
congealed.
It was congealed. Super high blood pressure. Just nothing.
Yeah, not good.
And of course, Jeff abandoned me and went and sat in the air conditioned rental car that our friend Chris Ryan has.
So he wasn't even with you in the traffic jam.
No, he left me.
Okay.
He said, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Who can blame him? It sucked.
Yeah, I
listened to like almost an entire audiobook sitting in the car, like, and here's the thing is my e-brake was not good enough to hold on a hill like this.
Yep.
And later on, someone drove the car and left the e-brake on, which shit-canned my entire e-brake. So I had e-brake the entire way home, which sucks. It absolutely It is a bummer, especially so Oakland Hills are hills. San Francisco Hills are mountains, right? So I end up staying with Veronica in San Francisco and I'm driving up these hills and there's a stop sign on the top. So it goes like this, flat, this, and there's a stop sign fucking right here, right on that hill.
Yep.
So you drive up and I'm in this fucking car and I'm just, it is really hard. Like you roll back really fast. You roll back really fast. So you're like, you do like almost like a little burnout every time. Holy crap, dude. That was such a nightmare with no e-brake. Funny thing is I knew my e-brake was getting low. So I've got new shoes for it here, ready to install. Yeah. I've been here for 2 years sitting here ready to go.
Should have packed them up.
Anyway, our Airbnb was on Mare Island. Lucky us.
Right where Luftgekühlt was.
Right. Just because of the association with what Jeff had to do with the painting and like what with me with Mobile One, I kind of knew
like,
where,
let's get
I knew
close.
Where it was ahead of time.
Oh,
and
I get
so
it.
I like
yes.
I like totally sniped that spot. There's only a few Airbnbs and we had a really good one right on the island.
That's
awesome. So we drive over there. First thing we do is, well, drive and go to sleep because it's dark. We were gonna drive
it
over.
It took so long.
Wait, no, I'm lying. I'm totally lying.
Yeah,
we went over there and we parked the car and we went and walked around and saw like some of the cars right next to the bay, like the 962 and this old 935.
Right, as they were staging the show.
And we had a couple beers and stuff like that. Dude, I was
cool.
Absolutely white. That was really cool getting though. Like kind of like a preview of what was going on. But I couldn't see the architecture really because it was dark. I didn't really know what it was.
The setting.
So I wake up in the morning, got to go pick up the press credentials. How does this work? How did this happen? Because there's like multiple days. I don't remember. I can't remember if the Mobile One cruise was before Luftgekühlt or if it was before Air and Water. I don't remember.
Right, because there was basically two shows.
I think it was before Luftgekühlt because Jeff's work came up and found a spot for my car. And I did not... did I show my car in Air? Yeah, I did. Wait. Dude, I'm losing it, man.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't remember. I don't remember.
That's all right.
Anyway, okay. So I get there. We get the car, the 911 parked. You hop out of the car. And Jeff gave me, like, a really nice spot next to a building with these cool, like, industrial... like, you know, like, the little small rectangular windows? That's everywhere.
Yeah.
That's how you kind of know what period that is. It's the at one point it was just single pane glass. You throw a pebble at it, it explodes and kills everybody. It's just like this really, you know what I'm talking about? The glass that's like
I guess that's not how I would describe it, but okay.
Remember that what is it? Plate glass. It's just plate glass, like a plate glass window. That's the one where you fall through it and you just get torn to shreds.
Like well, yeah,
you, yeah,
yeah. I don't want to do that.
It's not safety glass of any kind. Just like the studio apartment that we used to have. Not studio apartment. Yeah.
Yes.
We share a studio apartment. No, the studio the studio thing we had. That was
We had in Lower Town. God.
That was like that one of our second places.
And second or third place, actually.
In the wintertime, it was like 45 degrees
there was
in there.
No heat.
No heat.
Oh man. My goodness. It was so noisy because of those windows. And it was right by the light rail.
Yep. And it had steam
not to
pipes
mention,
and that were sounded like
not to mention it, like the rest of all the like studios were rock bands.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But like just not jamming. Even good rock bands.
No.
Just
no, it's like
anyways.
It was like White Snake meets a broken circular saw.
Yeah, it was bad.
So it was bad. Anyway, there's buildings like this. So we get over there in the morning, I get the car parked, I get out and I walk around. And the Luftgekühlt this year was enormous. Enormous.
Really?
I bet it was a half a mile walk across the grounds, maybe a little bit more. It is on Mare Island, which is a old naval shipyard.
Right.
World War II. Okay, so this is, we're building destroyers. We're building
they
submarines.
Need space.
It is huge. There's these massive buildings with these huge cranes inside.
Yep.
And it is an absolute playground for Jeff Swart, like to park cars and put them in like little spots and everything. And here's the deal.
You know what it is? It's like as a kid when you had your matchboxes and you were like parking them different places, right?
Yeah.
And use boxes and stuff out in the yard.
Remember that rug that had all the roads on it?
All the roads, yep. Yeah. And then you put your own buildings and stuff. Like, you know, you'd have just boxes you'd put there.
Yeah,
that's what Jeff Swart was doing in real life.
Kid and candy store, for sure. I mean, it's incredible. And, of course, there's cars in the buildings, too. So they're up on the wood things and they're parked, you know, in a certain way. And I can, as a photographer that understands vanishing points and understands perspective and light, it is so well done. And this is like compared to the previous Luft, which was, I'll be honest, it was not great.
Was that Indianapolis?
No, that was, it was in Los Angeles and it was just,
that's right. Yep.
it was not great compared to like Indianapolis and Hollywood and stuff like that. It was not on par. I mean, it was a good show.
Sure.
But when you've set a bar that's that high,
yeah,
it was okay. And yeah, you just get so excited to go see what Jeff has set up and what Lufkult and Pat and Matt and all these dudes do to make it amazing. It wasn't as good as the other ones. Still a good show, but not
this year.
This year, I guarantee you there are a lot of people with FOMO that didn't go. Yeah,
yeah,
you,
it's me,
just like
right
you
here. I get what? It. Yeah, so why didn't setting you, me up for that one?
I was. Why didn't you go?
Overcrest, we're going to have a really busy year this year. We have a lot of cool things going on, and I have a new kid. So I was just like trying to balance family and work and Overcrest and everything else and these trips. And I was like, you know what? Yeah. I don't need to go on this one, but that it sounds like it was a mistake because it was awesome. It sounds like
it was incredible. And so you've got this shipyard and you've got everything from the huge buildings that are like a mile long, right? Because what are we building in these things? Ships. So these buildings are
big.
Four stories tall, a mile long, iron I-beam girders inside because they have to put
huge industrial
industrial winches and hoists and like the
cranes,
big things with the chains and all this stuff.
Yeah,
all
chain
over
fall.
They're all over the place.
Yeah.
And they're like, what warning capacity, 15 tons. And you're like, holy shit. Like, what? Like, are you kidding me? And outside, there's all these other cranes that there's little tracks on the ground that go around the dry dock. Just like little train tracks. And there's these massive crane.
Gantry train.
They're so big. You look up and they're like four stories tall. These massive cranes that would drive along the dry dock, moving around to like pick things up and install them on the ships. And like they would build like the cabin that the captain sits in, right?
Okay.
The little box that dude sits in. They would build that off ship, drag it over there. The crane would pick that fucking thing up, move it over, and they would move the whole thing and drop it on the ship. So
yeah,
all
it's
this
like Legos,
stuff,
but giant.
They were not screwing around back then. This is World War II we're talking about, and then Cold War after that. Now it's. I think they still work on ships there. It's pretty clear that they do.
I was going to ask, like, is it still
not
used?
It is. There was like some sort of battleship there, but it would look older.
Oh, cool.
I don't know. I should look up the history of. I would like to do some maritime history with you, Jake.
I agree. I have a lot of things actually on the list.
We should do a history of Razzle Dazzle.
Yeah.
Razzle Dazzle Camo. It's actually called Razzle Dazzle.
I know. It's amazing. It's just meant to confuse.
True. Absolutely. One of the buildings was painted with Razzle Dazzle. Probably as like an homage to it. There was nothing.
That's really cool.
No part of the show was over there because it was kind of like out of the way. But that, I mean, what a backdrop that was.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm trying to impress upon you the scope of
the
what
scale.
Was there. The scale, the scope. And of course, the cars were incredible, right? I don't even need to get into that. Everything you'd want to see, all the cool shit
and
was all there.
People have seen them.
Yeah.
On
seen
social
pictures,
media.
Social media. It was great. The cars were great. People
what
were
was
great.
Your, what
Food
was your
great.
Favorite car that you saw there? What was your highlight car?
The Vasek Polak 934. Or RSR, RSR. I think it was a 3-liter RSR. That is white in the corner. I've got a ton of pictures of it. Easily my favorite car there. I love white. I love all of Vasek's cars. Well, a lot of them anyway, were always white. And they just were very white and plain.
Is the traditional motorsport color of American teams, by the way.
Whatever the case may be. That's not what everybody does. I'll tell you that right now. There's a lot of American teams that have got shit all over their cars.
It used to be that was the case, though.
Oh, so we have a American white. That's great.
Yes.
Okay, so we have British Racing Green, and then we have American white, which just makes us seem even more racist.
Okay, I wasn't going there with it.
It's just kind of funny.
I'll have to look up the history of it, because,
there
were, like, traditional colors.
Why is British Racing Green? I mean, there is history
behind this. And I've looked it up before. That is part of it.
I want to hear it. We'll do a story. Do a story on that one.
Yes,
I'm interested.
Let's do it.
Maybe we'll, before we get into... What else? I've got all kinds of shit to talk about. But before we get to that,
we're already at an hour.
That's
we got to talk about our awesome subscription box sponsor, Petrolbox. Petrolbox, made specifically for the automotive enthusiast in your life, whether it be
Jake,
a car girl, car
I'm
guy.
Gonna
what's
go
that?
As fast as I can to get a soda. Talk slowly.
Okay. No, we don't need to talk slowly because Petrobras is exciting. We want to hear all about it. It really is cool. Every month, they select really cool detailing supplies, apparel, garage gear, tools, stickers. You get an enamel pin every month now. You get branded pins, magnets for your toolbox, everything that you need, and also like really cool, surprising items that you wouldn't normally maybe even need or purchase, but always come in handy for some reason. It's like serendipity. Whenever you get a tool in Petrobras, Chris, don't you agree you end up using it?
Oh yeah,
and it's something you may
even
not have had.
Even when I think it's something like I don't need this.
Yeah, I don't need that. And then it's like, oh, dude, I do. So that's what's great about it.
Petrobox. Petrobox.com. Use the code Overcrest.
Petrobox.com.
See, I'm not great.
Use the code Overcrest. Yep, that'll get you $6 off. Yep, you got Petrobox Basic, little as $19.95 a month, makes a great gift. Petrobox Premium gets even more gear, $39.95 a month. Check them out.
All right. Where was I? Lufka Cult. Incredible. So here's the thing. Here's what they did. You got Lufka Cult on Saturday. And you know what was the best part about it? Because it was so big, I didn't feel like I was asshole to elbow with everybody.
Oh, yeah?
It didn't feel like I was...
It had been congested at other times.
Yeah, I didn't feel like a piece of plankton in a sardine can. You know, it was... It's just
There shouldn't be plankton in a sardine can.
Well, typically it
would be sardines.
Yeah, but then you're just the same size as everybody else. My point is that you always felt like so small and everything was just so big, but there were so many people. And it was difficult to like, I want to look at something, right? I want to look, yeah. I want to observe. And, you know, Indianapolis was great, but it was congested. Hollywood was great, but it was congested. LA, right. This last one, there was a lot of people. This was like, it was big. And my only complaint about the showgrounds and this and everything was that the middle of the show had a little bit of dead space that I think could have been. They have their reasons for doing the way that they did.
So yeah, I'm sure
the layout, everything. But I just wish there would have been a little bit more in the middle. But all the like the good buildings and the good stuff was a little bit segregated. But it lent itself to the sense of discovery that you get with.
Well, I was going to say,
you walk.
Yes,
and you see
it seems
things.
Like every year there are things hidden almost, right? That you just happen upon and discover, and that's kind of the magic.
One of the coolest things that was discovered, and I don't know if this was day one or day two, but you walk into this building, and Ken Block's Hunapigasus is just there by itself.
Yes.
In this entire enormous building. And it was great because it gave all of the negative space around that car added to the gravity of that car.
Yeah.
It was a memorial. And Jeff gave a speech, which I missed, and I'm sad.
Oh wow.
He gave a speech and he revved the car up for everyone. I wish I could have seen that. I'm sad that I didn't. I missed it by about 2 minutes. I caught Jeff walking out and talked to him. He's like, oh, yeah. I was like, no, I would love to have seen that.
Do it again, Jeff. Do it again.
Do it again. But there was tears in the crowd, apparently.
Wow.
You know, Ken Block passed away, and that car was like kind of like one of the last things he was working on. And to give it that much gravity, to give it that much space was really special. That was the one really big discovery that was cool. Okay, so day two. They had two shows at Lufka Cult.
Right. So for the first time ever.
First time they had Air and Water. And I, of course, go, okay, what are we trying to do here? This is like, what are we trying to get? Obviously, we want to make more money. But we also want to provide a cool thing for people. Because if you're providing a cool thing for people and you're not making any money, that's no good. But if you're making money and you're not providing the thing, that's no good. So you want to provide a thing and make the money. It's great. Everybody's happy. It's an exchange, right?
Happy? Yes, it is.
Happy. Everybody's happy.
Okay.
But I was
you were dubious.
I was like, what are we doing here? I was dubious for sure. That's the perfect word for it. However,
because you're worried
you're
watering down the formula, right? I think that's maybe the concern.
Right. I could not have been more wrong. Day two, Air and Water was the best car event I've ever been to, car show wise. It was phenomenal. All
better
the cars
than any
were
Luft.
Phenomenal.
Yep.
It's the best Luft ever. It's the best. It's a new thing. So there was water cool cars there. But here's the thing with the 911, especially Porsche 2, but the 911 kind of defines this concept. So you have a car that was designed and released in like 1963, 64.
Yep.
That car still exists, the 911. And correct. in the air-cooled era, that chassis and that tub existed to the late 90s. There is no other car, period, that has had right. a heritage that's had that arc. That has gone for 40 years, and the model still looked like nothing else.
The lineage.
I mean, the Mustang, okay. But the Mustang but changed the so many times, and it's not the same right. chassis, and it always evolved. And it always, you know, ended up being shit, and then it was good again, and then it was shit again, and then it was good again. The 911 has always been a good car. So you have this whole story arc. And then all of a sudden with Lifgekult, it stops, right? It's the arc goes up, right. and then it stops. But if you start right. including the water-cooled stuff, it tells this whole story of everything. Huh. It connects the dots from the beginning to now. And yes. normally I would think a lot of the newer cars haven't earned it yet. And I still kind of do right. feel that way. Like you walk up, and I admittedly would walk right by of a green GT3 RS, right? I walk right by. I don't really yeah. care. But right. having that with the older cars and the breadth of variety that it gave was really, really nice. And
that's awesome.
Day one, I could barely walk across the showgrounds without stopping, like, every 5 seconds to talk to people. Like, it's just
sure
for some reason day two it was a different crowd. It was really enjoyable. It was really laid back. Lufthansa is very serious. Like, it's a very serious event. It's a lot of time to set up. It's beautiful photography, this, and for some reason, not to say the Lufthansa isn't fun, it's just a very serious, like, well right. done show. You don't yeah. go to a Broadway show and like talk during it, and like, because if there's you know there's like this sense of respect, I think, with
sure
difficult.
That makes sense.
And for some reason the vibe was different with Air and Water. It was that's so cool. Good and so fun. I really enjoyed it, seeing like air-cooled race cars with water-cooled race cars, some yeah. that have earned it, some that haven't earned it yet. It was, I mean, Porsche brought the new, whatever the new 962 is, whatever the new hybrid super billion oh, right. car. That was there. Yep. I got to look at that. Super cool to see.
That's awesome.
I loved it. And they do a really good job. Like, all the little wooden things that they have out at the show that say, like, Lufthansa on them, right? The branding is like, their branding is so good, dude.
It's
so good.
Yeah.
The next day, all those had been painted blue, and they said Air and Water on them. Their wow. attention to detail, like the signs changed, like everything that they do, they're very, 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 very good at. They are the yes. kings of doing this. And they did an insanely excellent job. And I cannot thank Pat, Jeff, Matt, everyone else that's involved that I'm forgetting.
Everyone that was
all
there.
The partners yeah. that helped make it happen. Everybody that was there. Thank you so much for putting on something like this that is so good, with a high attention to detail. It is so refreshing to go to something and not just have it be some sort of like cash grab event, you know, because it's so right. easy to do that now.
Yeah.
Let's throw a get together. I'm so sick of cars and coffee. It was so special and so
That's
unique.
Awesome.
And I really enjoyed it. And I just thank you to all you guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for a years of work to give me that
yeah.
one or two very special days. And an excuse to hang out with my friends and talk with everyone in an environment like that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
That's awesome. Well, you've succeeded in giving me and everyone else that wasn't there severe FOMO.
Good.
Which I think is, yes,
good.
Mission accomplished. Here's yeah. what I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to actually talk about the road trip on another episode, because I think this is really good that we wrapped up. We
yeah,
talked about Luke, the experiences.
We'll call this
part
one. I
think it's really
one.
Awesome. I agree. So I think with that, we will see you guys next week, and we'll basically continue on, because it sounds like you have a lot of other stories.
I do. I would also, before we go, now that everybody stopped listening, we need to stop doing this, Jake.
Sorry.
Overcrestproductions.com/drivers club.
That's
right.
We've
had a lot of new dudes come on. You guys are awesome. Thank you.
We should give a shout out next week. We should go
yeah.
through and give a shout out to all our new members.
Yeah, we could do that.
We have new exclusive content. We just did
just
one this last week.
I put it out right
Amazing.
Before I sat down. Worked on
Love
it this morning.
And I have several more in the works here, guys.
Yeah.
If you're not on the Discord, we also have an exclusive section for Drivers Club members
like,
on
like
the Discord.
It's popping off. It's popping off, dude. There's a ton of people on there hanging
awesome.
Out, jamming, talking about shit. It's great. If you miss forums, we have forums.
Get over there. Yes, we
Get
do.
Over there. On that note, we'll see you next week for the chat about the road trip with my daughter. We'll talk about exploration, fatherhood, photography.
Can we get her on, maybe?
Yes.
Would she have something to add to the story?
Yes. Yeah, we can get her on.
Awesome. That'll be cool.
We can do a separate segment with her when she's home. We'll do it. I think that would
be
a lot of fun.
I love her. That'd be cool.
All right. We will talk to you guys next.
Take care.